When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Now,
Trish, look at this.
You are a sight to behold. You are a sight to behold. Yes. What is that you're wearing?
This is an Essential Antwerp. That's the brand, kimono. So most of the summer I've been looking for a kimono because, you know, I love my fashion.
Oh, well, should I describe it? It's bright pink. It's got flowery bits. It's got, is that a bit of leopard on the other sleeve?
I feel it might be, yes. And obviously, Trish, because I am a very small person, limited of height, my kimono is trailing along behind me as if I'm wearing a much taller woman's clothing.
Oh, but you're wafting around the house. Very nice.
Yes.
Hello. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife.
I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy. And we're on a mission to tackle all the big and small issues that affect women at this stage of our life. From insomnia to mind and body wellness, HRT to sex drive, careers and relationships, and as always, the challenges and joys of parenting teens.
And in fact, this episode is a bit of a teen special, as we'll be talking to the founder of Teen Tips, therapist and parent coach Alicia Drummond, on the most challenging aspects of parenting our adolescents, from setting boundaries and consequences to recognising when your child might be heading for trouble.
And Trish and I will also be talking about hair, from how to keep it lush and lovely in midlife to our feelings on going grey and the hairstyles that have charted some of life's major milestones. How are you this week, Trish?
Very good, thank you, Lorraine. Yes. Candy, how are you?
I'm quite perky this week, but I've got a slight problem with the dog.
Oh, what's the dog done? Pixel, Pixel done?
We had to take her to the vet, and the vet says she's a little fatty.
Were those the exact professional words?
Technically speaking. I said, oh, no, she's not. She's just like, we haven't had her shaved. And he said, no, she weighs an awful lot more than she did at the beginning.
Oh.
I felt judged and slightly shameful because I don't know how come. Well, she's a greedy pig. That's mainly why. And then I realised when I got home, I weighed my good self. I'm a little bit of a fatty as well.
I've got on lockdown quite a bit of pounds. Weight.
Yeah. Lockdown lard arse, as my teenager called me. Yeah, round the middle bit. If you put anything on round the middle bit, has Margot put anything on round the middle bit?
No, Margot, it's she goes up and down by volume of fur, a bit like Pixel with the fur. There's a lot of fur going on, especially in the summer. I don't know, it all seems to sort of go a bit matted and I have to comb it out.
It's all about the hair, pet hair.
Oh, pet hair. Yeah. Well, we're going to be talking about hair today.
We are indeed.
On today's episode.
We should get back to the old Why Are We Here podcast situation. I've always got my little menopause meerkat eyes out there, out there. And Jenny Eclair's book is out. It's called Older and Wilder, A Survivor's Guide to the Menopause. I was looking at interviews with her and she's developed a little character called Little Miss Menopause, which I thought would make you laugh. I just wondered how you would sketch that. Yeah, no, there are no pictures. Steam coming out the top of her head and a very furious face, clutching her expanding middle, saying, who am I and why am I so cross about everything? And there's another new book out, my little friend Kathy Lett, Australian lady, very funny. It's called Husband Replacement Therapy.
Oh, another form of HRT. I'm liking the sound of that.
Yes, you can't get that at your GP, can you? Either.
Now it's time to welcome this week's special guest, Alicia Drummond. Alicia is a trained therapist and parent coach and is the founder of Teen Tips, an organisation that works with schools and parents to create positive mental health, well-being and resilience for children, as well as creating environments in which young people can thrive. So welcome, Alicia.
Hello, Lorraine. Hello, Trish. It's very nice to be with you both.
I'm going to kick off our discussion about parenting and living with and being with adolescents and teens by asking you really about setting boundaries. One of the questions I get most asked is, How do we say no? How do we set boundaries? How do we not punish, but set consequences? And what do we do when we've done all of that? And because we genuinely want the best for our children, and they push back and it becomes really confrontational.
Boundaries is really interesting, isn't it? Because it's one of those topics that just comes up again and again. And I think the most important thing, first of all, really is kind of trying to decide whether something is actually a boundary issue or not. Because teenagers are going to make mistakes. And if it's a one-off and it's not necessarily something that you've particularly talked to them about, then it's probably better to chalk it down to experience and move on. And it's that, I think, is more about having a proper conversation the next day. See what happened, why the wheels fell off, what they might be able to do differently next time. Having that conversation, listen, my little treasure, your job is to go for freedom and for independence and a bit of experimentation and a lot of fun. And my job is to keep you safe. It's a bit like you're on a piece of elastic. Your job is to take the elastic and it's to pull away. My job is to set you up to be able to take the elastic. But if you prove yourself unworthy, I also reserve the right to tweak it back in line.
I think there's something to be said about the difference between punishing teenagers with the boundaries and setting consequences for them. Because a lot of people who comment under my column say, I've taken the door off their room, or I've told them they're never driving the car again. And I just think that's punishing. Yeah. That's not saying if you do that, we will do. Yeah. I mean, but I think it's taken me a while as a parent to work out the difference, because you don't know what to do, because you think you should punish them because your parents punished you in that way. That's the Gen X way, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that idea of punishment, you know, it's not altogether helpful, because it tends to be a reactive response. So quite often we go a bit overboard, and then you go, right, you know, that's it. You've lost your phone for a week, and then they swear at you. So suddenly it's a month, and then they say something else that's disgusting. So it's 2 months, and it's completely unused. You know, it's just unused. It's never going to work,
isn't it? Yeah.
No, because you need them to have the phone, because otherwise you can't find them either. Mm. What we try and help people to do is, first off, try and view it as a mistake. And then if it happens again, then that's no longer a mistake. That was a choice. And if it's something that ultimately would get them into trouble in terms of their safety, that's when we're tweaking the elastic. So then, you know, then it's about having that conversation about, we're not going to set the rules and the rewards and consequences in the heat of the moment. So instead, we're going to have a discussion about it. But what happened yesterday was not okay. From my perspective, it wasn't okay because what was it like from your... So you invite them into a sort of bit of communication. Before you do all of that, there's one other thing that's really important, and that's to make sure that if you're co-parenting, your other half is on board. And that doesn't mean to say they have to agree with you, but they do have to agree to... One of you has to take charge on this one.
I was going to talk specifically maybe about 16-year-olds, not just because I've got a pair of them, but it does become increasingly hard to say no to teenagers as they get older, and especially in that sort of 16 to 18 period where you know they're probably going to be trying vaping, there's alcohol, they can get their piercings done when they're 16, because they really feel like, well, look, I'm kind of nearly a grown-up here, and I know what I'm doing, and everybody else is doing it. How do you advise on that sort of area?
If you've done a lot of the setting them up for success, so that's talking them through all the different, you know, because they're not wired, their brain's not wired to think through long-term consequences. So, you know, discussing the impact of drugs, sex, alcohol, pornography, whatever it is. So we set them up to be successful. We recognise that, you know, you're going to be out with your peers. And one of the things that I find happens most often is that inability to resist peer pressure. And it's not because they really want to do it often. It's sometimes because they don't really know how to say no. So actually, I think one of the best things we can do with them is give them tools to be able to say no. It's important they come up with it, really. But it could be something like, oh, you know, oh, we've got sport tomorrow, or my mum will kill me, or it really doesn't matter as long as they can say it. Mm. And I guess that's the same with the consequences as well. So as particularly with that age group, let's discuss why this isn't really working very well. So I've just been doing this actually this morning with a 15-year-old, just about to be 16, over the phone, because she thinks she should be allowed the phone all night because all her friends are, and her mum's determined that she's not having the phone past 9 o'clock. That's your rule.
Yes, that was my rule. I think it gave us like a year of them. It was just awful, but I'm glad I stuck to it.
Yeah.
So how did you negotiate it? Because we were both very hardline, not in your room and not after 9 o'clock.
If you've established that as a rule, you want to do it early and just stick with it. But they've already got themselves into a situation where, yeah, you know, their daughters have it. So I was like, okay, we've got to find a compromise here, because you're saying 9 o'clock. She's saying most of her friends don't even go on it till 9:30. We have to find somewhere where we can meet, where you both feel like you're giving a little bit of ground. And I think teaching teenagers to negotiate is quite powerful, actually. It was quite funny, actually, because we ended up at, I think it was something like 10:25.
Yeah, we ended up at weekends. We said at weekends, because she kept calling a meeting to do a presentation on it. And we ended up with saying that, okay, all right, so Friday and Saturday, that's fine. You can have the phone till midnight, but you have to bring it up out of your room, and we have to trust, because we'll be up before you in the morning, that you've done that and it's there. And that kind of worked. But I think it's so much easier for the next generation, because this was with my 18, nearly 18 and 17 year old. So with my 8 and 13 year old, they absolutely know this is coming. They're not allowed their phones in their room, and they know that they will have to hand them in at 9 o'clock during the week.
But Lorraine, you're saying you've obviously got soon to be 18 year old. So Alicia, when they get to that age, they are adults, but they might still be living in the house, or they might be coming backwards and forwards to university. How involved do you think you can still be as a parent? Where does your elastic band go with that age group, would you say?
I think really we've got to have got them ready to fly by 18, because, you know, they're going off to university. You're going to have no control whatsoever there. So they've got to be able to look after themselves by that point. And I think that's what we're noticing, is less and less of them are ready. And I think partly that's because they've been so micromanaged that actually they haven't really been able to do any experimenting at all. Then they arrive at university and it was like, whoa, you know, everything's out there. You know, you've got to think, by 18, they're officially adult, but they don't have an adult brain till 25. So they're still going to make mistakes. You just have to hope that you've given them enough at that point to be able to look after themselves.
I guess as well, you have to sort of feel like they have to feel you're available for them if they need you, don't they? And that you'll be fairly non-judgmental when they tell you things that make you grip the side of the chair. Yeah. As they're telling you it.
Oh. Your best unshockable face.
Yes, exactly.
So what are some of the other main concerns of the parents that you work with at Teen Tips? Because we know that, you know, again, maybe uniquely to this generation, they are under huge amounts of pressure and have a lot of different sort of well-being and mental health issues. And maybe generations before them, we know there's issues around body image, eating disorders, from pornography, self-harm. There's a lot going on out there.
In terms of the eating disorders, they're incredibly complex. So it's not just one thing. They tend to be anxiety driven, but there's also a genetic component to them. I think perfectionism, that toxic drive for perfectionism, is fueling the problem. Social media has its part to play in that, you know, that compare and despair sort of culture.
So how would you advise parents in that situation when they've identified their adolescent has an eating disorder or issues with their body?
First and foremost, I think you always want to be getting professional help, because there's a lot of evidence to show that the longer an eating disorder is left untreated, the more firmly established it becomes. Yeah. So you want to be proactive. And I think some of the problem is that we just don't really want to see it. For lots of different reasons. It's frightening, we don't know what to do, we don't really want to believe that it's happening to us. There's a certain amount of shame perhaps involved. And so it's kind of cutting through all of that and being able to be sort of brave and strong enough to say, you know what, this is not working, we need help here. Start with your GP, definitely. And they usually will be able to refer you on. But that's why what we do at Teen Tips is we try very hard to be proactive, because I think if you're relying on the system picking up the pieces at the other end, i.e. the CAMS, child nap, it's a nightmare. Yeah. It's an absolute nightmare. So ideally we want to create those environments so they don't have to go down that route. But if you've got there, then you're going to need some specialist help.
Well, this came up quite a lot on the when I asked for listeners what they would ask is this silence where they just, you say what's wrong and they say nothing. How do you break past that?
So you, well, first of all, you just, you know, you've asked the question and you've got that, I'm fine. So then I'd always go back and say, oh, okay, well, you say you're fine, but what I've noticed is that you've become increasingly withdrawn, or you don't seem to want to socialize with your friends anymore. And I'm just wondering. So you notice and wonder, notice and wonder. And just the very fact that you're trying to guess what you think's going on for them, A, it gives them permission to feel what it is that they're feeling. B, well, actually, she's bothered to try and work it out, so maybe she does care enough. And see, sometimes they just don't really know what's going on. So if you give them the words, if they're teenagers, if they don't agree with you, they'll just bat it away anyway. But at least it's got them thinking.
The other thing I think it's worth talking about is teenagers struggling to understand and actually talk about, acknowledge their sexuality and their changing sexuality. It's part of their bodies changing and their thought process and their brains developing. So if your teenager thinks they might be LGBTQ, for example, how do parents help?
I guess it slightly depends how it comes up, doesn't
yeah.
it? Because you know, you sometimes you have your suspicions that this might be something that they're struggling with, but they haven't openly told you, in which case the conversation goes something along the lines of, you know what, at your age it would be really normal to be, you know, questioning and considering you know, what feels right for you, and I just want you to know that whatever you decide is fine by me, and if you want to ask me any questions, I'm always here. You know, we kind of have this preconceived idea, don't we, as parents? You know, you give birth to a boy or you give birth to a girl and you look down at them and you kind of project how their life is going to go. And when they throw you that kind of googly, which you weren't expecting because you didn't see it coming, it can be a really big shock. And I think it's about being kind to ourselves whilst accepting where they are. So if you are really shocked, it's okay to take time, but they need to know that they're not being rejected. So kind of saying to them, you know what, obviously you've been thinking about this for a really long time and I'm so glad you came and talked to me about it. I absolutely 100% accept your decision, but it's just going to take me a little bit of time to catch up with where you're at.
So Alicia, I'm quite keen to talk to you about friends and your children's or your teenagers' friends, because we know they are hugely important to them, aren't they? They're almost like more important than you are at this stage in their life. And the chances are if your own child, you know, luckily enough, doesn't have any sort of major issues, possibility that some of their friends will have, you know, self-harm issues, anxiety, stress, eating disorders. And I think with girls in particular, it can get almost quite hysterical, because they're all trying to solve each other's problems. They're all trying to be so emotionally supportive. And I certainly know with my daughter, she almost feels this responsibility to try and fix her friends' problems. And often they can be quite major problems that, of course, a teenager shouldn't be trying to fix. How would you, as a parent, manage that?
Funny enough, this is something that came up yesterday, actually, with a client. And she was doing exactly that. She said, oh, you know, well, a couple of my friends and they've both got eating disorders. And, you know, it's really nice because I think I'm OK. So I can be the one that's there for them to talk to. And I had long conversation with them, basically getting to that idea of, you know, people who work with eating disorders, self-harm, they go through an awful lot of training. And a big part of that training is how you manage to keep yourself OK. And, you know, we're empathic creatures. So you will be affected by what they tell you. Now, if you were going down the psychotherapy route, then a part of your training would be learning how to manage that. But you haven't got that training. So you do need to be really careful that you look after yourself as well. So you want to be there for your friend. Of course you do. And I get that. But actually, the best thing you can possibly do for them is to encourage them to find an adult who's trained to help them, because it is really, really complex work.
Do you think teenage girls like to create drama?
Oh, yes.
Upstairs to downstairs, mine can have like five different sets of drama situations.
Or just going down the stairs.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's very difficult, and I'm sure you've talked to families maybe, Alyssa. how you negotiate that bit where you don't like one of their friends or you feel that one of their friends is a very bad influence.
You have to remember that their friendships kind of, especially at that age, are a reflection on how they see themselves as well. You know, you learn a lot about your identity by the people you're around, and it's a fairly fluid thing, particularly at the beginning of adolescence. So, you know, you remember your girls in years 7 and 8 and they're all falling out with each other left, right and centre, and it's a complete nightmare. And you don't do what I did. So Daisy came home one day and she went, oh, so-and-so was saying this. And I was obviously having an off day and I was like, oh, darling, she's been a bitch all term, for God's sake, move on. And of course, there was a horrible silent moment. And then the next day, they're best friends again, but I'm not allowed to talk about it. So that's not going to work. You don't want to diss their friends because you just drive them into their arms if you do that. But sometimes you might have to start questioning it. So I had a really gorgeous client and he was a bit of a monkey really. And he came in and anyway, one time his mum threw him through the office door and she said, go and tell Alicia what you've done now. And I was like, oh God, here we go. And anyway, being caught shoplifting at school, in the school shop. I said to him, you know, so why do you think this happened? And it was just this particular group that he was hanging out with. And I said, well, I know that your school has like a 3-strike rule and you're on strike 2 and the third one means you're out. I said, do you like it where you are? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, do you want to be there next year? So he goes, yes, of course. I said, well, what do you rate your chances of getting from now, which was October through to June? And he sort of looked at me and I said, you have to make a choice here because it seems like last time you got in trouble was with these guys. What do you think you might want to do differently? He sat there for a while and eventually came back and he went, I'm going to join the surf society. I was like, right, tell me a bit more. And he goes, well, they're really cool, but they don't get into trouble.
I wanted to ask you something about us as parents, really, because I think generally we're not very good at giving ourselves credit for the job that we're doing, because there's always this sense of impending danger, or there's a sense that we could be doing something better, or they could be doing more, they could be learning more. How do we get out of that mindset and just try and maybe focus on some of the joy that parenting can bring?
The best thing you can remember is that actually the worst thing you could be would be to be a perfect parent, because that's just a nightmare for any teenager to have to deal with. And actually, they need to see you making some mistakes. One of the things that we've become too risk averse and we don't allow ourselves or them to make mistakes anymore. And actually, that just increases people's anxiety. So actually, you're doing them a bit of a favour if you mess it up a bit, as long as you acknowledge that you've messed it up a bit and go back and show that you can apologise as well.
It's actually, that good enough theory, isn't it? We're good enough. I always think they're still all alive at the end of the day. So
yeah,
that's good enough for me.
It's about relationships, isn't it? You know, at the end of the day, they're going to choose your care home. So you might as well put more effort into the relationship.
What a wonderful thought.
I'm being really nice to the one I think's most likely to choose my care home.
Lizzie, do you want to just tell us a bit more about Teen Tips, the website, the club, and what services you offer?
We do a lot of work with schools, with parents, with organisations and businesses, all to help. It's all about, as I said that earlier, that preventative thing. So helping them create environments in which young people can thrive, particularly in terms of their mental health and wellbeing. That's what we're all focused on. And then we have this Parents Club, which is really exciting. It's been something that I've wanted to do for about 2 or 3 years. We were going to launch it probably the end of 2020, but actually with everything that's gone on, we decided that the number of calls we were having coming in, everybody needed support now. So we've launched it. It's got audio parenting course, which each month we look at a different topic. So it could be resilience, it could be sleep, it could be eating disorders. It's got a massive bank of Q&A. So having done this now for 11 years, I challenge somebody to put a question in there that I haven't come across or got an answer to. So it's a massive bank for those moments when it all kicks off and you're just sitting there thinking, oh my God, what am I supposed to say or do next? It's got directory of therapists, it's got specialists, it's got a forum so you can link up with other parents and share the ups and share the downs and get a bit of support. And then last but not least, which I think is really important, particularly at the moment when kids are so much more online, is that I managed to find a company abroad, actually, who do, it's the only one in the UK, I think, at the moment, cyber safety insurance. So if anything happens, like bullying, harassment, extortion, threats, the sharing of intimate images without consent, if you remember, you've got this insurance and you can, anybody in the family, if it happens to them, you can ring up and they'll come and take the content down, which is often a really hard bit.
Thank you so much, Alicia, for joining us. That was really, really helpful information. I'm sure we will have eased the minds of a lot of anxious parents out there. So thank you very much.
Is it teentips.co.uk?
It is teentips.co.uk. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you very much
for having me. It's been great.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now, it turns out when one looks back at pictures, before you and I knew each other, mm-hmm. that we had the same haircut when we got married, on the day we got married.
I know.
Really short hair.
Isn't that weird? Mine was a kind of sort of wedge type affair, which sounds like shouldn't be right for the 1990s, but I was actually growing out this little sort of pixie haircut that I had, which was rather nice. But when we decided to get married, I thought, well, no, I need a bit of hair to shove a veil or something in. So I started growing it out and ended up with this haircut. And then I saw your picture on Instagram from your 20th wedding anniversary this year.
So I've intermittently had very long and very short hair. But as I've got older, this has been the biggest shock, actually. It's become incredibly thin. So while the hair on your head stops growing, the hair on your moustache, however, you could grow a tree there, frankly.
And your chin. Don't forget the chin.
The chin as well, yes.
A few little sprouters on there. That's always great, isn't it?
I know. I did the terrible thing of, because I'd never had, because I'm so blonde, I'd never seen any hair on my top. I can't believe I'm even talking about this. It's really not very sexy. And when I went to get eyebrows done, I said to the lady, what's this here? And she said, oh, well, you get older, it sometimes happens, it just gets a bit thicker. So I said, great. Or not on my head, but on my top of my lip. And she said, it's all right, I'll thread it for you. And I just said, yeah, that'd be fine.
Ooh, painful.
Right, worse than being in labour. Top five most painful things you can do to yourself. There were tears pouring down my face.
God.
And she just carried on and said, yeah, it is quite painful. Lots of people cry.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting, isn't it, hair during perimenopause, because just as we don't have the same skin at 50 as we did at 25, yes, the condition of our hair changes too. But of course, it's more than just about greys, isn't it? There's quite a lot of other things that can happen at this time.
Well, it's to do with the follicles shrinking, isn't it? And it's a little bit about blood flow as well. And I actually went to see someone about it because it felt like so much part of my identity, my hair. And then I just couldn't, it was just breaking off in the shower. And also I had a really severe iron deficiency, which apparently a lack of iron really does cause havoc with your hair. So you've got to get it. And I noticed a difference within weeks when I started bumping up my iron. But it is to do with estrogen as well and your declining rates of estrogen. And it just gets thinner and it can get
caught. I think because estrogen has a protective role in that it can help to keep hair in the growing phase.
Yeah.
And, you know, other things that can happen are, as you mentioned, hair follicles, they become very sensitive to hormonal changes. And as you said, they kind of shrink. And then your hair can also feel coarser because the oil glands in your hair become less active as well. Because I noticed that with mine. I just thought, oh, it's gone a little bit wiry. It's gone a bit dry.
And I think just to note as well that it's all cultures, women from all backgrounds are kind of going to go through this. Sadly, you know, nobody is exempt from the ever-changing hair. So I think among the sort of black and mixed heritage women, particularly people who regularly use braids and weaves, the hair is going to thin as well. And there are lots of things that you can do, but it's probably best to seek advice from a proper expert on this, and not just your hairdresser, because a lot of hairdressers are very good at younger women, but they're not so good at women over 40.
Some of the things that I've kind of, you know, had drummed into me over my years of working in women's magazines are, there's just a couple of things really, like using a hair mask once a week, a treatment mask, because it's all about moisture, getting the moisture into your hair, and always using a heat protection spray, because I do tend to do a little blow dry and then use a tong. And if I don't use a heat protection spray, the old split ends and dry bits is a bit of a disaster.
I think with hair colour, it's such a skill that has to be done by an expert. So your friend of mine, Josh Wood.
Oh, yes.
Brilliant, brilliant colourist. But his website is really good. It's got lots of videos if you do fancy doing it yourself or have to do it yourself. And he has a really brilliant range of colours that you can buy. But he shows you how to do it. So look at the how to do it.
Because apparently there's a way that if you want to grow it out, you have to grow it out, and how you manage that kind of in between phase. Because we know how painful sort of growing out hair color or growing out very short haircuts is.
That's my big bit of advice, actually, Trish. Because when I was 43, I had it cut really short, thinking, I know what I'll do. I'll go for that pixie cut without knowing what was coming at me was that. To grow any hair out after the age of about 40 with all of this just takes years.
Yeah.
I had it cut short and bleached very, very white blonde, and it was a massive mistake. Would have been brilliant in my early 30s, but it's been hard to grow out. The hair thinned. It's been one of those niggles in life that you probably, if you know about it, do not have your hair cut short. That is not the time to do it.
So what do you use then?
I've got a fantastic hairdresser, Zoe Irwin, who's the kind of creative director of various massive brands, but she really knows her stuff because she's the same age as me as well. We've known each other a very long time. But she recommended something called Nioxin, which is a hair thickening brand. So they do these great packages where you get, it's for chemically treated hair as well. So if you've coloured your hair, it's particularly good for that. So you get the shampoo, you get the conditioner, you get a scalp treatment. They also do a vitamin. Which I've been taking, which I think makes a difference. But Philip Kingsley does quite a good range, and he's kind of the old school, very famous. He does supplements as well. And also there is something called Hair Gain, which is a supplement which a friend of mine recommended. But I have to say, since I started getting the iron right, it is a bit better.
So now it's time, Lorraine, where we share what we've been trying and testing this week. What have you been up to?
I've been doing something quite interesting, which became slightly bigger than when I just said, I think I'll just test this. And it's really fascinating. So I've been testing something called Mind Walk Yoga that a friend of a friend set up. Zakia Bishton, she's a yoga teacher. She's got 10 years experience. A lot of her work is around post-traumatic stress disorder and how yoga can help people recover from that, how they can be less anxious. And she's done a lot of work around depression as well. So it's not a cure, but it's a way of managing symptoms. And what Zakia does is, she describes it all on the website, is she works with the parasympathetic nervous system. So once you activate that, and often it's activated from your throat, so singing activates it a bit. It's all to do with the vagus nerve, which we've talked about before. But it's the basic premise is the longer you exhale, the better it is. So the exhale sends a message to your brain saying you're very, very safe. You don't need to be in a fight or flight situation. You can ignore all the cortisol. You can relax. This site is a sort of social enterprise, so it's free, a lot of her yoga classes, and it's supposed to be also aimed at a really diverse audience, because she's a black yoga teacher. There are not many. It's just not a very diverse industry. But what I practiced this week was ujjayi breathing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you like that,
don't you? I do. It's throat breathing, isn't it?
Yes, and also coherent breathing.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? I'm not a coherent anything, so coherent breathing is a good place to start, I feel. And she does it with chimes. And what's so brilliant about it is when you watch it, she says, we're going to sit for 2 minutes and we're going to breathe. And she sits for the actual 2 minutes. You know, normally they say sit for 2 minutes and then I get confused and think, oh God, 2 minutes is taking 10 years. But she sits with you as you're doing. It's just really nicely done. Very easy to follow. You aren't going to get it right the first time. You do it in 15 minute chunks, or you can do a 5 minute session and follow her. It's a bit weird at the beginning, I would say. And one time I felt very sleepy afterwards. Mm-hmm. And another time I had a really intense headache across my right eye. So in both, I think it takes a bit, but now I find it really calming.
I really like the sound of this. Can you spell the name? Maybe
it's
the website.
Mind Walk, which is one word, MindWalk yoga. And it's on YouTube. But there's a website as well.
Very nice. So
what have you been doing?
Well, I'm hoping you can see. Does my jaw look a little bit firmer? Do my cheeks look a bit plumper?
Is it good lighting, Trish?
Well, it could be. I've been practicing good lighting. No, I've been doing some face massage and face workouts.
Oh, how boring.
I've tried two things, actually. So I had a go at face massage, which I've always resisted before because I thought, well, I haven't got the time. I can't be bothered. And actually, I did a facialist called Abigail James. You can find her on YouTube. And
with your hands?
With your
actual hands?
You're doing it with your hands. She shows you how to do it. It's like a 4 to 5 minute video. Put on a bit of facial oil and then you do all these sort of pummeling, sculpting, lifting.
You do look quite radiant.
Oh, well, yeah. thank you. But I loved it.
Have you
it.
Not had a drink either this week? Is that maybe?
Well, of course I have. But actually, I tell you what, if you were hungover, it would really sort you out, I think, because it's because there's a lot of lymphatic drainage of moving the, you know, whatever fluids down around.
I wish the listener could see this, the dogs from midlife. There's his arms going everywhere.
Arms going, gesticulating. So I also did sort of the other end of the scale. I had a go with a device called a Face Gym Pro, and it's this sort of handheld device that it uses electrical pulses to stimulate your face muscles, and you're given a little diagram of all the movements you need to do with this one. But basically it feels like your face is being like flicked, little flick things and little twitchings, and it's actually the muscles being stimulated.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's actually really good.
Brilliant.
And I've actually used it I've had one for about a year now, and I thought, well, I'd add it into this discussion because I've been talking about face massage, and it is, I think it's quite good. I do it once a week, maybe on a Saturday morning, and when I've got a bit of time, Saturday or Sunday morning. And because it works on keeping the muscles firm, improving blood circulation, which stimulates cell renewal, collagen production, all of these good things. And here's the bar, it is expensive. So obviously the face massage free. The Face Gym Pro is about £500.
Good God.
It's quite the investment, but I would say it's you know, if you're somebody...
Well, you do have very lovely skin.
Thank you.
That might be the reason.
Is it tempting? I don't pay for facial. I'm not a kind of big facials. I just have time, money, all of that. So this is what maybe the cost of 5 to 10 facials, depending on what you have. So I kind of think, because I'm not very much into the cleansing type of facials. I prefer like a treatment that really does something. So this could be that treatment. Nostalgia noodling bits. What's been on your mind?
Well, I was looking at gadgets and various things and having those discussions you do with the teens where you have to just explain everything the whole time because they have no cultural references. They don't know who Cher is.
I mean, how can they not know who Cher is?
They're missing something big there.
And I just happened to glibly say the other day to my husband in front of my teenagers, yes, it was like when we got a new Trim phone at home. It was so exciting. It was like the new. Do you remember a Trim phone?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It was very cool.
They were very square, retro and modern at the same time, weren't they? They were very 70s looking. And we had a dark blue one. It had its own table in the hall.
The phone was always in the hall, wasn't it?
Why I remember it mostly is kind of my early, so I would have been about 15, my early love life, if you can indeed call it that, would have been conducted. I just remember sitting on the floor in the hall as everyone walked round me. Either talking to a boyfriend in a kind of barely speaking kind of way, or talking to a friend of mine about the barely speaking boyfriend for about an hour and a half. The whole evening would pass as people were, because it was, do you remember, it was cheaper in the evening to make a phone.
Yes.
I just remember spending hours sat on the floor on the Trim phone. I suppose it was a bit sort of Sex and the City, wasn't it?
Ahead of its time. Very nice.
Nostalgia noodle this week?
Oh, well, similar probably. Well, actually slightly younger age maybe, but I was out in the park the other day and there were some school kids there and they were skipping with skipping ropes, but like with a girl at either end and then you're jumping in the middle. Do you remember that?
Buffalo style.
Double Dutch, if you do the double Dutch.
Yeah, around
exactly.
The outside.
Yeah. So that got me thinking about other kind of games that we played. And at home, we used to play this game. Kiss chase with my sister. No, thank you. In the garden. And it involved tennis balls. And you would put a tennis ball, you get a pair of your mum's old tights. Get a pair of your mum's old tights, American tan, cut one of the lengths, you'd shove a tennis ball down the end of the tight into the foot.
This is sounding violent already.
But then you'd stand against the wall and you'd whack the ball with the tight either side of you. And you had to kind of get a bit of a rhythm going. Do you remember that? And then you might go up diagonally. You might go up diagonally into the air and then you might lift a leg up and do it under the leg.
It must have had a name, that game. I'm going to have to
I don't know. Maybe somebody, if anybody out there knows it, they could tell us.
Should we bring it back?
On Instagram or social media. Maybe we'll do a little video of us doing it. Take one of the dog's tennis balls and have a go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, lovely to think of you doing that. Take that little image away from me and you and your tennis balls. Right. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this drivel, really, Trish. That's all I can say. Can't imagine anyone's made it to the end to listen to that, but it was quite an enjoyable chat. So
we've had fun. So Lorraine, if anybody did actually like this episode, what would we like them to do?
We would like them to download us, Postcards from Midlife, on whichever app they get their podcast from. We'd also like them to follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Postcards from Midlife, and Facebook, Postcards from Midlife. And we have a website, postcardsfrommidlife.co.uk, so you can send any questions or anything you want included, or brilliant midlife stories, because we have had some great stories from listeners, and it would be lovely to interact with you a little bit more. So thank you for listening.
And we'll be back again this time next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.